This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
I'm Marcy Silman. Ross, that sounds almost like football watching music. If you don't already have tickets to Saturday afternoon Seahawks game, folks, you're out of luck. The field's 70,000 seats have been sold. It's great news for the local economy. Hotels, which are normally half empty in January, are near capacity on game night. Local brewer Hilliard's has put out a theme beer. It's called the 12th Can, and you can even get a Seahawks license plate now. Hosting a playoffs game, according to some estimates, can bring between $90 and $20 million to the local economy. But that's just a drop in the bucket compared to what taxpayers have shelled out to the franchise. That's according to sports writer Greg Easterbrook, author of The King of Sports. Greg Easterbrook, welcome to The Record.
Glad to be here.
By your count, what have Washington taxpayers invested so far in the Seahawks?
Well, if you state it in today's dollars, Washington State taxpayers paid almost $400 million for the construction of what's now CenturyLink Field. Paul Allen, one of the richest men in world history, paid a little more than $100 million. But when you look at the revenues, Paul Allen keeps almost all the revenue. He pays only a token rent for the stadium, roughly $1 million a year, which would be like you having a, compared to the cost of that facility, that would be like you paying $25 a month for your mortgage.
But what about the ancillary money that comes in when there is a big game? Doesn't that make up the difference?
No, not even close. It's certainly nice. Seattle will be even more of a beehive of activity than it normally is this weekend, and I expect you'll see a terrific game. The Seahawks are having a great year. But studies consistently show that public money spent on football stadia especially doesn't have anywhere near the economic multiplier effect of equal amounts of money spent on infrastructure, roads, bridges, tunnels, even if your tunnel boring machine has run into a buried flying saucer or whatever has happened in Seattle. If the public's going to spend money, it's much better off spending it on infrastructure. And this is worse with football stadiums. With baseball stadiums, at least they're in use all the time. Football stadiums are twice as big and they're used 10 times a year.
I'm talking with Greg Easterbrook. We remember in Seattle back in 2002, the city faced the threat of losing the football team if a suitable stadium, now CenturyLink, wasn't built. Is it better to have laid out $300 or $400 million and have a team than to have no team at all?
Well, if I lived in Seattle, I would want the Seahawks to stay there. They are tremendous entertainment. But I would want them to stay at their own expense. Paul Allen's a businessman. He's a very wealthy businessman. Why should average people be taxed to increase his profits? NFL teams constantly threaten to move. Most recently, the Minnesota Vikings threatened to move unless they were given $500 million by the Minnesota State Legislature, and the Miami Dolphins made a similar threat to move from Miami last year. There hasn't, unlike the NBA, where franchise moves are common, as you well know.
As we know.
There hasn't been an NFL team move in almost 20 years. The NFL is very uncomfortable with the notion of franchise relocations because they think it could lead to political retaliation. They are so incredibly, their deal is so sweet. They're so subsidized. They have an antitrust exemption, which the NBA does not have. They don't want to lose those things. So when the Seahawks were threatening to move, I think the odds of that happening were really, really low. But think about it from the standpoint of politicians. An NFL team threatens to move. If the team does move, however unlikely that is, you get all the blame. If you keep the team, even by handing over a huge bag of the taxpayers' gold, then you could you can claim a huge success, and you can say, and think of the thousands of jobs it will create. Well, the thousands of jobs will never be created, but you can claim that. It looks good. It's somebody else's money that you're giving away, isn't it?
Well, we're not talking just about, I mean, you and I are talking about Seattle, but this isn't just something that happens here. How did this sort of public subsidy structure come about in the first place?
Well, there's two answers to that. The first, you go way back to the 1930s. During the Depression, the WPA, one of the things that it did was build sports stadiums. And at that time, people needed jobs, so it was a great idea. That created in people's minds the notion that big sports stadiums should be paid for by the public. If you come as close as the 1960s, at that time there was far less money in professional football than there is today. The Seahawks didn't exist in the 1960s, but at that time, the teams that did exist, very few of them could afford to build their own facilities. So they got public money, and the implicit bargain, which should have been an explicit bargain on paper, but was at least implicit, is that they would keep ticket prices low so the average guy could come and see the game. Well, now it's 2014. The NFL brings in $10 billion in revenue per year. Ticket prices have been rising at double the rate of inflation. There's no longer any need to subsidize NFL facilities, and yet the tradition continues, and the owners will keep taking the money until politicians stop offering it.
Well, stepping away from stadiums for a second, there is also big money in revenue from broadcasts. Who profits there?
Well, almost all the money that's generated from broadcast and ticket sales is kept by NFL owners. So you have this situation where one of the core problems in our economy is we have this situation where the risks are shared by the public and the profit is privatized. That's exactly what happens with the NFL. CenturyLink Field being a publicly owned facility, if copyright law were changed a little so that you couldn't copyright images made in publicly owned facilities, then you and I could start a television network and broadcast Seattle Seahawks games. Right now, copyright law allows the NFL, for first the Seattle Seahawks club and then the NFL larger above that, to assert a copyright over the images that are filmed at public expense in public facilities. And I think that's an aspect of copyright law that should change. If that changed, the NFL would pay back, Paul Allen would pay back every dollar of subsidy on that stadium on the day after that law changed.
Well, we've been talking dollars and cents, and in fact, football, baseball, basketball, those are all businesses, but they do bring something that transcends dollars, don't they?
Well, oh, sure. One of the nice things about football, my book, The King of Sports, is people have found it hard to characterize because I love football. I think it's fabulous, but I also think it needs structural reform. And, you know, we live in a Twitter policy debate sphere where you're expected to be either totally against or totally in favor of something. I'm a big fan of football. The games are terrific, but I want it reformed. And one of the things that's terrific about football is the sense of civic pride that's generated in the case of Seattle with the Seahawks or lots of the college towns around the country. A lot of their college town pride comes from the football team. Those are great things. Those are good, and then it's especially good that enthusiasm for sports spreads across class lines, race lines, income lines. There aren't that many things in American society that do. But just the fact that football is a fabulous game that so many people are interested in doesn't mean it should be subsidized by the public.
Greg Easterbrook is author of the book The King of Sports. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Marcy.
With Ross Reynolds, I'm Marcy Silman, and you're tuned to The Record on KUOW.